Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's really made that leadership change. I feel like he's speaking a lot more, talking up, using his voice more, and we all appreciate it. It was fun to watch him in camp and see what he's done so far. And the best thing about him is he always wants to get better. He's never satisfied. So I think that's going to take him a long way.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Snark alert. Apparently, Christian Gonzalez can make appearances on Good Morning Football, even though he doesn't make appearances on the practice or game field for your Patriots. But
get some context to it. He was there promoting Latin American heritage or something like that effect. So give the kid a break on that one.
I wish he was on the field promoting victory for the Patriots in their defense and
wow,
not giving up, I don't know, 800 yards through the air over the first two games and all of those things. Anyway, he had very nice things to say about his quarterback, Drake May. Sorry, my headphones got disheveled there. And his quarterback, Drake May, the leadership, the growth. Yes, Dan Ball.
Can I just clarify that it's Latino Heritage Month is what he was
thank
promoting.
Thank you. Gosh, I was messing it up.
No, I know, but there were a couple different versions floating around. I just figured we'd put it out there.
I threw out a lot of the wrong versions, yes.
Well, if you throw out a lot, you're due to be right at some point.
Well, eventually.
You're a volume scorer in terms of that. Drake May, making leaps and bounds, we hope, in terms of leadership and everything else, and that's great behind the scenes. It's great, Ted Johnson, that Christian Gonzalez says that, probably believes that, sees it. Locker room, practice field. You know what's even better? When the whole world sees it on a game field. The whole world saw Sunday a franchise quarterback. For one day. I don't know if it's sustainable. We can get into the it and premature its and J.J. McCarthy, who was the greatest thing since sliced bread for his fourth quarter a week ago. Now he stinks and he's hurt. Now he's like the worst combo. But Drake May looked like a franchise quarterback in Miami. You highlighted the throw to Ramondre Stevenson, which the aspect that I liked about that, after bitching about him overthinking and not looking comfortable, in the midst of sliding up in the pocket to avoid the rush, he just immediately flicked it. Like, there wasn't time to, are we sure the play is there? Yeah. Is this what Josh wants me to do? What if I don't do it exactly? He just played ball.
And another thing, too, there's edge pressure from both sides on that. And I think it was Jalen Phillips on the outside got a paw on his.
He did.
And he was able to secure the ball. He didn't drop the ball. It wasn't a fumble. It was, he shook him off, reset, and then threw the ball.
It was like one of those drills, Fitzy, we see them do in camp, where they're working on footwork and sliding in the pocket and two hands on the ball. Stay square, feet are under ready to throw.
He had
all of
both hands on the ball.
Yeah,
it was
both hands on the ball.
You're right.
Perfect.
You're right.
And therefore, we are now having a little bit of victory lap Tuesday about Drake May. So, Fitzy, now that you mentioned it earlier, sometimes we react, especially us. You and I have a unique role. Boom, game ends at 4:01. We're on the radio. We're just talking about what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't, how we feel. Then the next day, we do a full show on it. But now that you've had a couple days to sleep on it, where are you in terms of what we saw from Drake May? Was it just because it's in the South, there's humidity, and he's a warm-weather quarterback? Or did we see a step in the evolution of the franchise?
Yeah, the hell with that training center they're building next to Gillette. Like we talked about, they need a roof and a humidor to make it more Drake May suitable, because even he admitted he likes playing in the warm weather in conditions like Miami had out there. That said, overreaction Monday begets recalibration Tuesday. I am not recalibrating off of my excitement from Sunday, which rode straight into Monday and into Tuesday. I think we saw a significant step forward for Drake May. It doesn't mean that he's going to throw for fantasy-leading top 10 QB stats every week, but he took a big boy step in the right direction on Sunday. And luckily for him, even though it feels like it's going to be a good old-fashioned Pat Steelers, hard nose, hit him where you can't get him, throw down on Sunday, Steelers are giving up 400 yards a game so far. So believe it or not, this may be actually a good opponent for Drake May to take on Sunday. But I still feel great. I saw him do things on Sunday I've been dying to see him do since you guys went gaga over him in April 2024.
So, Ted Johnson, I know we don't always love lists and numbers and stats here, but Dan Ball threw this in the rundown. Highest passer rating through the first two games of the season in a quarterback's second year when they are less than 23 years old. You want to hear the list?
Sure.
Lamar Jackson, he's pretty good, right?
He's pretty good.
Patrick Mahomes, pretty good, right?
Really good.
Dan Marino, I know you think he's overrated, but he had a pretty good career.
Dan was a hell of a quarterback.
Jalen Hurts, CJ Stroud, and number six on the list, Drake May. That's pretty good company, right?
I like that, yeah.
You're either in the Hall of Fame already, you're headed toward the Hall of Fame, or you're at least a guy who turned a franchise around in Houston. Yes, mm-hmm. Dan Ball.
I did have to get pretty specific with that stat to get Drake that high up the list, but he's up there.
Don't poo-poo your own stat. I was giving you credit for a fun list of good quarterbacks.
I got more stats real quick. Can I just go run through them?
Sure.
Courtesy of Evan Lazar. This was Drake May's highest single game QBR game. This was his highest single game total EPA. This was his highest game total EPA per play, highest single game CPOE, no clue, and then highest single game PFF grade. So whatever you think of that. So a lot of
CPOE?
CPOE.
Okay, good.
No clue what that means.
That's
but it was good.
You have breathing issues?
Maybe so. I don't know exactly what that means, but the point is this was his best game of his young career. And so for all the people that have been kind of telling you that he's got special traits, it was the first time where he put it all together, and he averaged more than one turnover a game in last season. He was averaging one a game mm-hmm. to start this season after the week one interception, and this was the first game where it was a clean game.
And where did it happen?
In Miami.
Miami, where even Tom Brady had, like, head-scratchingly bad plays, games, throws, turnovers. And I know some of it was Jason Taylor and different guys on the defensive side of the ball, but weird stuff happens for the negative in Miami. And instead, there were a lot of things that were negative for the Patriots in this game. I don't think there was you watched it multiple times. You did your whole breakdown. How many plays were not perfect for Drake May or were bad plays? Like, I can't even think of any that I really didn't like. I thought he did everything really well.
Yeah. And Ted, to back up what you were saying as well, via Next Gen Stats, the shotgun rate was cut in half.
There you go.
And also, how about this? Ready for this? The motion rate in week one, this is how stagnant the offense was in week one, 18%. Yeah. Week two in Miami, 70%.
It just
way more play. They moved the ball. They moved the players. It was so much more exciting to watch.
I know Drake played shotgun most of his career last year, but there's a predictability piece to the running game when you're in shotgun. There's only so much you can do. And if you're not going to run the quarterback every now and then in those RPOs, then it's like, then it's kind of meaningless. The best way to get your running game going is under center, in my opinion. And he looks brilliant under center. Like, what's the problem with him under center?
I don't see a problem with it. But do you think this was a game Drake May evolved, played well, whatever, or did Josh do a good job putting Drake May in position to utilize his – did he match the scheme and the game plan to the quarterback?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what I think.
And this is where this is going to be interesting because coordinators have egos big time. I thought you could see the ego in the defensive coordinator's game plan for the defense in week one and for the offense coordinator in week one. And you know what? I just worry that Josh has his way of doing it. This is my system. It worked with Tom Brady. Bro, you got a guy that is so different than Tom Brady that he should be doing different things, and he's got to open his mind to doing different things. And I hope that this was a kind of preview of more to come because that did not look like a Josh McDaniels game plan, typical one. This was different, but it looked so much better.
And we've been having a debate, Fitzy, about this whole scheme versus talent, you know, going back to Jabril Peppers and the defensive side of the ball. And this felt like the scheme was, or the game plan, was adjusted to meet the talent of Drake May. And Ted mentioned it, Fitzy, right from the get-go, sort of the boots, cutting the field in half, some of those things you do with young quarterbacks, making it. And he's good at it. He rolls out. I think he might throw still better on the run than he does in the pocket.
Because he's not thinking.
Agreed. Right. He just plays.
He just plays.
So, Fitzy, do you think this was a first step, not so much of Drake May and his development, but maybe the relationship and Josh McDaniels developing as the coordinator for Drake May?
Josh McDaniels developing as the coordinator for Drake May, and also what this Josh McDaniels 3.0 offense will look like. And I'm going to harken back to something you said in the spring as this coaching staff was coming together. I remember when you said something along the lines of, oh, Todd Downing, Thomas Brown, Josh McDaniels. Could there be too many Doug Marone?
Yep.
Could there be too many offensive minds in the room? Are they all going to be able to get on the same page? Or will Josh McDaniels' head/playbook be full of too many different ideas and opinions? That's could be the case. Too many cooks could spoil the broth. Too many directors could ruin the movie. But if they're going to work like that, if they're going to be in lockstep towards the greater good, team over scheme, if you will, Andy, then that can be a very good thing. That's a great point on the Thomas Brown stuff, Ted.
And not just the team over scheme, but just the quarterback. The quarterback is the offense, right? Like, I don't mean to be disrespectful to the other 11 and all these guys and team sports, and it's the greatest team sport. You're going to go where your quarterback can take me. So if Todd Downing, Thomas Brown, all of those guys, Josh McDaniels, if they just reverse engineer it, I know that's a bad word around here because I think that's what Matt Patricia used to say about offense.
Yes.
But if they just...
If you reverse aerospace engineering?
Yes. Yeah. But let's do football reverse engineering. How do we make Drake May the best version of Drake May and then build our scheme sort of and game plans backwards from that? That's what this game felt like to me.
And it wasn't, you know, a lot of times what you'll hear is there's teams that try to do it one way with a young quarterback and then they go, you know what? Let's introduce a lot of the concepts that made him great in college, and that's why we drafted him. He wasn't under center in college, so it's new, but being under center, but the plays out of being under center highlight his skill set, which is the most important. Highlight his skill set, and don't limit him in your play calling. Enhance his play calling by giving him more athletic plays to run,
because his skill set is the one thing everybody loved. Everybody, and I'm talking about literally everybody, guys who wanted to coach him, guys that wanted to draft him, trade for him, media guys, the Orlovskys of the world, all these QB analysts, Fitzy, Hart, Ted, that's all we could see, right, is pure skills. We're like, those are pretty good. He does a lot of things that should be good at quarterback.
Yeah, but just inconsistent with it and a little clunky at times. But there was, when the play went off script, you'd go, oh, did you see him?
Right.
That throw he did when he left the pocket, it's like, yeah, but he's not very good in the pocket. Like so
don't keep him in the pocket all the time. Don't, you know, round peg, square hole kind of thing. Right, Fitzy?
The question then becomes, can the script be dictated so that it's kind of like, can you make off script the script? Keeping him moving.
Sure,
moving.
You can. Yeah. Rollouts, boots.
Yes.
And then eventually.
But you have to change the core principles of Josh McDaniels' offense have to change. Is he... To me, that's the biggest question. Will Josh bend to the quarterback?
Yes.
Okay. We'll see.
We saw.
We saw for one game?
Yeah.
Yeah, one game.
One is enough.
Kind of had to with Cam Newton.
No, it's not. It's one
game. You're right, it's not. I was just kidding because the 781 wants us to remember, quote, they played the effing Dolphins. That's part of it, right? But they took advantage of the opportunity.
You know what? They did play the Dolphins. But you know what they did? They showed resiliency. Drake May, after he got you had a host at EEI Afternoons ask him if winning is important to him, right? Was it you that asked him that? Winning was important to him?
Yep.
Something like that. Like a week ago, you asked him.
That sounds like our show.
That sounds like me.
Okay. I don't know. So, you know, somebody at the station. and it was like 1 week ago, you're asking, literally questioning whether or not if football is even important to him. And this week, it's like, holy crap. It's like people are seeing everything that, you know, the people like us have seen all along.
All right, you want me to veer into the negative? Because if I really veer into the negative based on things Drake May said over the last, I don't know, 5 days, when he got excited to play in Miami because it's, quote, getting cold already in Foxborough, and then he told me it felt good throwing the football. Southern guy, I've always liked throwing in the humidity.
Yeah, yeah.
Should that concern me? You tell me, should that concern me? That the quarterback that plays in the Northeast in the cold in New England,
let me ask you this,
likes Miami better.
What was I harping on about the new rookie left tackle? What I always was like questioning
arm length and hand size.
Okay, so I was arm length, not his hand size, arm length. But when it comes to quarterbacks, I question hand size.
Yeah.
If you have small hands, I worry about you being a good quarterback in the cold. Yeah. So,
Kenny
yes.
Pickett.
So put a glove on like Kenny Pickett does.
Okay.
He actually had his hands stretched and he still sucks.
Yeah, but put a glove on.
I don't know. He had his hands stretched.
He actually went through like a hand, like he went through a procedure in the offseason 2 years ago to literally try and stretch his hands out.
Yeah.
That's a real story.
It's like when I hang upside down.
Dude, there's other things we can get stretched out on.
Oh,
our
yeah.
Bodies.
You can stretch anything.
Anything, huh? Wow.
Yeah, you got enough money and enough willingness to invest. You can stretch anything, Ted.
That's news to me.
Anything.
Get your hands stretched out.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
It didn't work.
And he still stinks.
He still stinks. But that was a little snarky, but I do worry that the North Carolina kid who played at North Carolina and then after the game is like, yeah, I kind of like this humidity and the way the ball feels down here. Well, guess what? Bad news for you. It's not going to feel that way most of your season. Because not only do you play in New England, you play at the Jets, at the Bills.
You know what he needs to do?
Get a good glove.
Get a good deflator. That's what he needs to do. He needs to get someone on this staff. Who's the new deflator? That's who it's got to be.
I didn't see that one coming.
Where's Dorito Dink?
Where's Dorito Dink when you need him, man? We need to take some air out of those balls in the wintertime because it'll be easier for him to grab onto that thing.
617-779-7937. Maybe one of these phone callers is a good deflator. Let's go to Justin in Washington. What's up, Justin?
Hey, gentlemen. I just think the Drake May game was so importantly huge, regardless of all the other circumstances, because he did something I didn't think he could do, which was do exactly what the coaches want. Be a check down merchant. Don't throw the ball into harm's way. Use your legs when you need to, when it's existential. So I know he didn't have the big glitzy stats. He wasn't throwing the ball to his receivers, and there's all these other concerns. But my question for you guys today is it almost better that he was kind of a check down merchant who didn't need to be Brett Favre and led his team to victory than if he just did all of his bad habits, connected on all these plays, and threw for 500 yards?
Thanks for the call, Justin.
There's a balance there.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot, you know, it really wasn't check downs. A lot of the short passes were designed passes right. that came out quick to running backs. But he also had, it wasn't a check down. That pass to Booty was not a check down.
First, I thought it was an overthrow to, I think it might have been Pop or whoever.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, no, it's actually a perfect throw.
Yeah, it's right. So that was a gorgeous throw. And then was that a check down to Mac Hollins?
No.
And was that a check down to Ramondre Stevenson?
No.
So those were beautiful passes that were not checked. So every now and then, yes, the check down's perfect. But he also had some brilliant passes down the field as well.
And I didn't ever feel he put the ball in harm's way. I mean, I guess maybe the Booty one, because it was such a tight window, inherently it's sort of in harm's way, but he put it where he wanted to, and he put it to a guy that I think he trusts to go get the ball. I think that relationship, even though it only paid off for one catch in this game, that relationship between Booty and Drake May is a legitimate thing. But no, I do think you didn't need him to be a gunslinger in this game. You needed him to be, I don't know if game manager is the word.
Souped-up game manager.
Yeah, an athletic game manager. Because mm-hmm. yeah. I also liked when he ran for the touchdown, Fitzy, and looked back at Matthew Judon like, you can't catch me. You didn't like that?
I loved it.
He ended the career of Matthew Judon in my eyes.
I love that he outruns. These guys take bad angles on him. They think they got the angle on him, and he outruns them. And you know what the looking back is? It's a little like
it's like the step over in the NBA.
A little bit.
It's a little.
You drag it on your face.
I think, boys, he's faster than people think he is.
He
I
is.
Bet they hear like, hey, watch out for that Drake. He's got long strides. He's quick, but he's legitimately quicker than they anticipate on tape.
You know what he runs? He kind of has this. It's not the same gait as like a Terry Glenn, but Terry Glenn is fast without looking. He looks like he's not trying hard.
Right.
Like Drake runs fast without any real effort being kind of thrown out there.
Let's go to the phone lines. Frank in New Hampshire. What's up, Frank?
Hey, guys. A few things. Ted, I think this started with what you said about being in the shotgun and limiting running. Do you think the play calling is going to be influenced to hit a lower ceiling for Drake May? And do you mix into that anything from Mac Jones' success this past weekend?
Thanks for the call, Frank. I'll leave Ted to answer that one.
Well, I have no idea what Frank was asking me.
That's why I left it to you.
I was hoping you could help me out. Is that? I thought
sure,
I maybe
Frank.
Misheard some. Frank,
I
like
know
Frank.
What that means, but whatever.
So let's go to the last part. Forget the first part.
Yeah, and I don't even know if I understood the last part.
Well, Mac Jones played. Mac Uh-oh. Jones threw three touchdowns. Mac Jones is where he was always supposed to be with Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers. Yeah. He thought they were trading up for him. Blah, blah, blah. Yes, Diz.
Well, it's like you know, I was telling you yesterday, I was seeing a lot of people saying, see, it was Bill Belichick that destroyed Mac. Now that he's with someone like Shanahan, he's going to blossom and become the quarterback he was always meant to be.
There's no truth to that at all. Like a little bit, a little something maybe?
Yeah, one game,
we'll see.
Well, and also, Kyle Shanahan's reputation is built on the most quarterback-friendly scheme in the NFL.
And running back.
Yes, but like I remember the Super Bowl when he was running the Falcons offense and Jimmy Garoppolo was the backup scout team quarterback and was like, this system really is quarterback-friendly. And then where did Garoppolo end up? Yeah. With Kyle Shanahan in the Super Bowl running that offense. Mm-hmm. So there's some truth to that being a quarterback-friendly offense
no
and a place you would want to play if you're a quarterback. 617-779-7937. Continue to take your phone calls about Drake May and the Patriots' victory in Miami. But up next, it is Tuesday, 4:30. That means it's time to talk to Brian Hoyer, the true one and only expert on quarterback play in the Josh McDaniels system. We'll get his thoughts on Drake May's breakout performance. That's next here on WEEI. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Well, Morgan Wallen, we're going to let that breathe for a second.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
You don't like Morgan Wallen?
Never heard of him until he came to Gillette. I didn't know who the guy was.
He is like the most popular modern.
If you're in country, yeah. If you're in
but
country,
bigger than that. He's
he transcends
pop country.
Country?
Oh, yeah. He can sell out like football stadiums anywhere he wants at any time kind of act.
Okay.
Yes, Dan Ball?
Could he be a halftime performer? Is he that big?
I would guess no, because he's got that incident with the word he said.
Oh, that's right, yeah. You know who you could ask, though, is the guest who requested him as the rejoin.
Oh, let's go to the phone lines now to our expert QB guy, Brian Hoyer. You're a Morgan Wallen fan?
Hey, I just went to his concert at Gillette. It was very entertaining, and he you're right. He is one of the hottest artists out there right now. I don't know if he's going to be playing the Super Bowl halftime anytime soon, but it was pretty cool to see him walk out with Vrabel the night I was there, and then I thought the walkout with Gronk was epic, you know, slamming the guitar with the Gronk spike. So seemed like it was a pretty good show.
Wow. You went to both shows, Brian?
No, I only went to the first night, but I saw my boy Gronk there the second night, and I loved him doing the Gronk spike of the guitar, which is pretty cool.
Brian, if you like Morgan Wallen and I like Morgan Wallen, let's not let Ted Johnson try to bully us into thinking he's less than he is. He's a great modern act.
It says more about me than the fact that I wouldn't know much about the guy than it says about.
I saw someone reference him as redneck pop music, which kind of makes sense.
Yes, I would agree with that. Brian Hoyer, so week one, we were asking Drake May and Josh McDaniels.
Mac Jones had a good week.
He did. And we're going to get into that at some point. But let's stick to Drake May for now. Week one, too much on his plate. Doesn't look comfortable. Doesn't look confident. Week two, goes into Miami. Tough place to play. Gets the win and has his best game of his young career. Look decisive and confident. Which one was an overreaction? Were we overreacting with the bad? Or are we overreacting now with the good? Where do you land on that?
I think week one is the overreaction. I mean, look, the reality was, and I said this after the first game, there were a lot of good plays by Drake in that game. He missed the first third down. We talked about it, his feet. I think the one thing that I saw in week two was just his feet underneath him. And it really showed on the play to Mondre that everybody's been talking about. Yeah, it was a great throw, but I think last year in that situation, Drake May would have felt that pressure. Instead of stepping up in the pocket and settling and finding the receiver down the field, he would have taken off and ran. And I think that's improvement right there. I thought his feet were very quiet. I thought Josh McDaniels did a tremendous job of getting him in rhythm early with some of these passes we saw on the move. And I mean, look, give Josh a lot of credit for him running a system he did for a long time. There were some plays, particularly on that first drive, the throwback to Austin Hooper. That's straight out of the Kyle Shanahan West Coast playbook. I ran that in Kyle. I ran that in Cleveland with Kyle. I ran that in San Francisco with Kyle. And so Josh is adapting his system to suit Drake May's talents. And the reality is Drake feels comfortable throwing on the run. So I think you're going to see that. And the hard part about that is when you're the play caller is if you're not running the ball well, then the defense isn't really always going to honor that. And so they got off to a fast start. They were able to run the ball. The O-line had better blocks in the running game. And then they were able to set some of those play action passes up, which I think really settled Drake in. And then the rest of the game, I mean, he just looks so calm, cool, and collected. You love to see it.
Brian, the game plan I just found interesting. You mentioned that looked like a lot like a Kyle Shanahan, that boot throwback, which was a beautiful play. I love that play. I do. But it felt like there was a lot of other plays that reminded me of, you know, there was a lot of zone, wide zone runs, zone cutbacks. Yep. You mentioned the boot throwback. You had the boots, the waggled. You had, you know, the ball was out fast, Brian. I just the game plan, it looked like I was watching the Rams or the 49ers. And I just wonder, do you think that Josh McDaniels will adjust his coaching style, his philosophies to fit the quarterback? Because he was under center a lot more in this game than he was in week one. Yep. Do you think Josh will continue down that road or his ego getting away and he'll stick to what he likes to do?
No, not at all. I think the one thing that people make the assumption like, oh, he's not running his offense. He's running his offense. Those plays are in the offense. And Ted, you may remember this. I don't know if you were playing, but they used to send Brady on some of those bootlegs and nakeds and things. And the story that I was told was one day he took a shot to the chin and Bill Belichick said, never again are we running those plays in this offense. So they are in there. And to be honest with you, when I was playing in the preseason or when Mac Jones was playing, we had those in the offense. You just have to make sure you call them against the right defense. I think that's the key. And that's why Kyle Shanahan is so good at it. And Josh is figuring out what teams to run them against and whatnot. I don't think you want to run those against a Max Crosby defensive end. Now you go into Miami with these guys who are roaring off the edge, selling out to chase the run. Now you can pull that ball. The thing that I loved on the one to Hooper was they motioned Hunter Henry from out wide so he'd have the angle to pin that defensive end so Drake could pull up and throw it back. So it all has to tie together, and I think Josh, it's all there for him. It's just a matter of determining what is my quarterback feeling good with, what are the players feeling good with, and what can we expose the opposing defense with. Look, the Steelers are a totally different scheme than the Miami Dolphins, so we will see them expose them in different ways, especially with the injuries that they're dealing with.
Brian, so far it seems like the running backs have proved to be, outside of Drake, the position of strength, the best skill position players on the team. They all kind of contributed on Sunday. Do you think that keeps up that way, or will we possibly see a true wide receiver one on this team emerge?
No, I think the one thing that I always said in playing in the system is the best way to move the ball down the field is throw to the open guy. Who that is, I don't know. The defense has to tell me, especially when you're playing a team that's going to play zone. I loved seeing Diggs kind of sit like on that fourth down play. They put him in motion and he was having that little sit route that we were so familiar with Julian or Dola or Jacoby Myers running. He has a great feel for that. I think you'll start to see him get more of these option routes. I love seeing Mac Hollins get involved. He's gonna be involved because he's in there to help block the down safety in the running game. And so when you do that enough, you're gonna bluff the block on the safety, and you're gonna go out, and that's where the boot touchdown came from. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways to get these guys involved, and the reality is we don't have a Jamar Chase. Stephon Diggs is pretty good, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, using him in the way that the Bengals use Chase or the way that the Vikings use Justin Jefferson. They're going to use it to expose defenses where they see fit. And I thought the best thing about Drake was he was just thrown to the open guy. You mentioned it, Ted, getting the ball out quick, reading the coverage, getting in a rhythm, feeling comfortable. And I just thought from week one to week two, the settling of his feet in the pocket allowed him to be so accurate. And the one thing I think, too, he did a good job of realizing and feeling the pocket and when to run and when not to run. And I thought that was awesome. The one where he kind of scooted up through the middle, he stepped up, he felt the seas part, and he took off and ran. And so it didn't feel like he looked like he was limiting himself to scrambling. It was just he was letting the defense tell him when it's time to go.
Former Patriots quarterback Brian Hoyer here with us on WEEI Afternoons. Brian, you just mentioned Diggs and some of those routes kind of underneath and some of the things we saw Amendola or Edelman do. Is he evolving into that slot guy in Josh's system, and are we seeing maybe Pop Douglas phased out? A lot of us thought that might be Pop Douglas's role, but could that end up being what Steph Diggs grows into?
I think there's a common misconception of what that slot role is in the system. I mean, we saw two different slot receivers play at the same time when Amendola and Edelman were playing together. Jacoby Myers was totally different than those two. Yep. Wes Welker was different than a lot of them. And the slot receiver, and the thing that you got to understand is when they do these personnel groupings, everybody's going to get a chance to play that slot receiver role, because one of the beauties of this system is that you can move guys around and you can put them in advantageous looks. So I think what I saw there is just trusting a veteran guy on an option route to make the right decision. And because on that route, you could sit, you can go across, you can come back out. And I felt like Diggs was so decisive. He sat down in the zone. Drake felt it, got him the ball quickly, and moved on. And look, converting that fourth down is what leads to that opening touchdown. So I think you're seeing a veteran receiver take on a role of maybe some of those option routes. That doesn't mean that Pop's not going to be in there to run some of those outbreaking routes, maybe some of those crosses. It's just a different way to use a skill set and a trust with a veteran receiver in Diggs.
I always learn something new listening to B. Hoyer. If you want to learn something about football, you'll listen to these hits. Brian, I was looking at your tweet. So you want to find Brian Hoyer on Twitter. It's at B. Hoyer 7 on Twitter. And I'm curious, you said this in your tweet. You said, "I love the empowerment of the players. You can see how the guys respond. Big foundational piece laid yesterday," meaning the Sunday game, "battling through the adversity to get the win in Miami," which we all know has been hard to do over the years. What do you think that win in Miami does for this team, what it meant for this team, when it comes to all aspects, the quarterback, the franchise, and the new head coach?
Yeah, I love the way that Vrabel, you know, he gets the game ball from RKK, and he's thankful for it, but he says it's all about the players. And I think when you do that, your players realize he's going to credit us and he's going to hold us accountable. And I think going down there and struggling through the heat and, you know, getting an early lead, losing it, punt return for a touchdown, then you respond with a kickoff, like all that back and forth. And I think Vrabel talked about it. Like, we got in a street fight a little bit and our guys didn't back down. You almost gain more of an understanding of who you are as a team, as opposed to just going down there and winning by two touchdowns. I think sometimes winning those grimy, dirty wins, especially in a place where it's been hard for the Patriots to win over the years, I have to imagine they feel pretty good about themselves because they won and they know there's a lot of things they can clean up. So that flight back from Miami was a little sweeter, having gone through the adversity and coming out on top.
All right. Well, it can't be all wine and roses. There was a little adversity out there the first week and the second week as well. The defense has had their issues. Obviously, the return of Christian Gonzalez will make a massive difference. Depending on when he comes back, we're not really sure. But the linebacker play seems to be a little bit of a concern right now. How do you think that gets adjusted, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, look, they've missed a few tackles. That's not what those guys are known for. And look, the touchdown to Achan, I mean, that's not the position you want to put Robert Splaine in. With 53 yards of field, they're playing two-man, and he's got it. He can't give up the inside leverage, but that's not – he's not a cover linebacker. He's a Mike linebacker in base defense that's going to go and hit players downhill. And so he's a little bit out of position there. I think knowing Spill and having played with him, he's going to get that figured out. I think the one thing that I think will help them a lot is getting Christian Gonzalez back, right? That'll shut down some of these explosive plays they've given up. And let's be honest, Miami Dolphins, they're reeling a little bit, but they still have explosive players when it comes to Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill and Achan, and they were able to hit some of those plays. And I think the one thing that you'd love to see is through all the adversity, when it came down to it, and now luckily Achan stepped out of bounds, so it gave him that opportunity. But the guy you paid all that money to in the offseason, over there, Milton Williams comes up with a big-time sack to seal the game. I mean, those are the steps that you have to take, those guys who you want to be your leaders, to step up and make those plays in a big-time moment.
Brian, how's your right arm feeling?
My arm's great. If I take one hit, I'd crumple like a paper bag.
I mean, starters are dropping like flies. Are you getting any phone calls?
Hey, Carson Wentz is still playing,
man.
No,
I'm too far gone. But it's interesting because I talked about that on SiriusXM Radio today. We were just talking about, you know, all these quarterbacks getting hurt. And Ted, you might remember this from your times playing here, but Bill used to say availability is sometimes greater than your ability, because it doesn't matter how good you are if you can't stay out on the field. And I think these quarterbacks have to understand, and I hope this goes along with our young quarterback as well, that having the ability to stay out there is one of the greatest skills you can have. We saw it with Tom Brady for all those years. That's one of the best things you can do is stay healthy and be out there for your team. And so, look, I hope Drake is learning from past experience. I'm learning from the guys around the league, because Jaden Daniels and J.J. McCarthy, when did they get hurt? When they scrambled. So you got to be smart. You don't want to take the aggressiveness away. The one thing that Drake has going for him is he's a little bit bigger than those guys. So you always got to be conscious of that and make sure you protect yourself out there.
All right, Brian, we appreciate the insight. As Ted said, I feel like we learn something every time we talk to you. So we look forward to talking to you next Tuesday.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
Hopefully another victory.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Brian Hoyer, who took heat unnecessarily from the midday show for his range of win prediction.
No, it was kind of a topic in the NBC Sports Newsroom, too.
Oh, really? He took heat there as well?
Yeah, yeah. Well, people are getting a chuckle out of the 8 to 11 wins thing.
Okay.
You know, so there's a lot of folks in the media snickering behind 8 to 11. Brian, come on.
Okay, predictions are useless anyway, so he did it in a different way than the rest of us screw up our predictions. Guess what? He's probably going to be right. I bet you he lands somewhere in that range.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be that hard to be wrong.
I'm actually taking notes, because you know me, I like to be right. Yeah. So if Brian Hoyer ends up right, maybe I'll start doing ranges for everything in the future. Appreciate Brian Hoyer joining us. We'll break down something that I thought he said that was very interesting about the receiver position, the slot receiver position, what we're looking for, what we're going to get out of that. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
If you missed any part of the show,
or to have it delivered to your phone daily,
subscribe to the WEEI Afternoons podcast on the Odyssey app
or wherever you find your podcasts.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
And the slot receiver, and the thing that you got to understand is when they do these personnel groupings, everybody's going to get a chance to play that slot receiver role, because one of the beauties of this system is that you can move guys around and you can put them in advantageous look. And I felt like Diggs was so decisive. He sat down in the zone. Drake felt it, got him the ball quickly, and moved on. And look, converting that fourth down is what leads to that opening touchdown. So I think you're seeing a veteran receiver take on a role of maybe some of those option routes. That doesn't mean that Pop's not going to be in there to run some of those outbreaking routes, maybe some of those crosses. It's just a different way to use a skill set and a trust with a veteran receiver in Diggs.
That was Brian Hoyer with us just moments ago here on WEEI Afternoons. If you missed our conversations with either Mark Schlereth or Brian Hoyer, you can download the WEEI Afternoons podcast, streaming on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also stream WEEI anytime on the Odyssey app, as well as iHeart and TuneIn apps. Reminder, tomorrow we will be at Fenway Park, where at 2:15 we'll speak with the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora. We'll also have our weekly chat with Adam Schefter, 3:45, and a very special, special, special guest at 5:20, Michael Chiklis, a local guy, a Red Sox fan, a Patriots fan.
Uh-huh.
Ted Johnson, you've met him before?
I met him at Radio Row. Forget which one. I gotta call my buddy Sean Pendergast and ask him which one it was. I can't remember, but yeah. I met him once. He probably has no recollection of that, but I'm looking forward to being part of that interview.
He's got a new movie called The Senior coming out on Friday. I watched the trailer. I'm a sucker, Fitzy, for a football, emotional, whatever.
Is it like The Natural? Like he comes back like 50 years later and he's like a good football player at 60 years old?
I don't know how good he is, but yes, he's a 50-something football player who realized he got... So the quick synopsis...
Don't get any ideas, Ted.
Yeah, right.
He got kicked off his college team as a senior. I think he was probably like a Division III level football player. Gets kicked off his college team as a senior. Regrets it his whole life. Like, what kind of captain gets kicked off? I'm the worst. Yeah. I'm that. I'm this. And then he realizes he has a year of eligibility left because he didn't play that season.
Yeah.
So he goes back, convinces the coach, can I try out? He tries out. He makes the team. But then there's this relationship with his son and his wife and his family and things he's done wrong as a father and all. I teared up watching the trailer.
Did you really?
I'm a sucker for these movies. I told you, I'm a legit sucker for an emotional football movie.
Okay.
Sucker. Dan Ball.
So he plays a 59-year-old in the movie, and of course, which is why he's on our show, plays linebacker.
Oh yeah,
no kidding.
Yes, sir.
And he looks like he's in decent shape. Now I've done a little research in some of the interviews he's done on the tour promoting the movie. He did have a stunt double. He said there were a few times that it called for him to take a big hit where he was like, "Hey kid, this one's on you."
Yep.
But he did say that a lot of the physicality, and if you can see his face in the shot, and there's a hit involved, it's him giving or taking the hit in the movie.
Very cool, man.
So, yeah, Michael Chiklis, hopefully, fingers crossed, because this is Hollywood and he's on plane flights and big deal and schedule. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he'll be joining us tomorrow around 5:20. Mm-hmm. But getting back to Brian Hoyer there and that comment about how we perceive slot receiver and the guys and the role and the production. Ted, I mean, I feel like it's good that even you, a guy who played against this scheme in practice, feels like you learned something in that answer.
Yeah, I did. I learned a couple things. I brought up the, you know, Kyle Shanahan influence in this system. He goes, "Oh, no, those plays are in there. They're in there." It's like, okay, they are. I just don't see them a lot. But he educated us on that, and then also the slot receiver. And I probably fall into that kind of – but I played with Troy Brown.
Yeah.
Which Troy Brown was always the slot receiver. Right. So, like, so that's part of my – and I was – you know, Josh McDaniels was basically getting the defensive coaches cups of coffee when I was mm-hmm. there. So
right.
he wasn't the – his system wasn't implemented to the degree it is now, I didn't know that, but you know what? He's right. Actually, when you think about it, I think they do have multiple. They don't have just if you have just a stud there at slot, they don't identify one guy as the slot. They put different guys in there. That was probably the right thing to identify that, but that fourth down play, just finding that area where there was no defenders, him throttling down. I mean, was Pop having issues doing that?
Yeah, that's the perfect example, Fitzy, of what I don't think Pop can do. And Brian articulated it well. The veteran receiver who you're going to have an option route, who can pick from four or five things, but he has to pick the same thing the quarterback is seeing. Otherwise, this could go horribly wrong.
Based off of what the defense is doing.
Right, oh yeah.
And so it's the 10,000-hour rule. Steph Diggs has seen everything defenses can do, so he knows probably better than DeMario Douglas knows on where to – stop and throw.
I'm not
down.
Sure it's just the 10,000-hour rule.
Maybe
I think
not.
Some of it is also
instincts.
Are you good at that? Like, is that part of your makeup? I think there's a lot of things Pop Douglas has that could make him a good receiver in the NFL. I'm not sure spatial awareness and those reads are really the strength of his game. So, but I thought that was interesting, Fitzy, because maybe that's the reasoning right there why Pop Douglas sees his reps go down, and maybe we're going to kind of change the offense.
And why Steph Diggs will probably continue to gain trust with Josh McDaniels and Drake May. That fourth, we talked about it immediately on the postgame show. That fourth down catch was huge. And you heard Brian Hoyer reiterate that's a McDaniels staple. It just used to be with Dola and Edelman. And I love the fact that he immediately recognized that crossfield tight end lob to Hooper as a Shanahan staple. Like you said, Ted, the offense, like the AI of Josh McDaniels is evolving and learning.
So, Ted, real quick question here before we go to break. I always love this idea because it happens all the time. Backup quarterback comes in and, like, Troy Aikman on the broadcast will say, what you want to do here is get him feeling good and give him some easy plays and cut the field in half and make it easy on him and get some completions. If it's that easy, why don't you do that all the time? Like, if you as the coordinator can literally scheme up completions, shouldn't you always do that to get the game going?
That's a fair point. But if you have to do that every game, then there's predictability in it. And it's also kind of, it's like training wheels. So you don't want a veteran franchise type quarterback. You don't want to put bumper plates on him. You want him to be able to kind of do everything. So
will I see boots and those things early in next week's game against the Steelers?
I would hope so.
Okay, me too. 617-779-7937 if you want to join the conversation. Coming up on 5 o'clock, that means it's time for The Drive, where we'll revisit a couple of the key points from earlier in the show and our interviews with Mark Schlereth and Brian Hoyer. That's up next on WEEI Afternoons.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money?
Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.